Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great Lonzo, and you with you every AM from 6 until 10. And we are glad to have you here as part of the radio broadcast. I am asking you, and this is not meant to poke the bear, but it has become such an extensive conversation over the past couple of weeks.
I don't have bear noise, so.
I don't either.
You know it's Fat Bear Week, right?
Oh, that's, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's Fat Bear Week.
Fat Bear Week's a remarkable week on the internet.
There's some tubbies going on. There's some really big fat bears.
Fat Bear Week is one of the greatest weeks of the year on the internet. And on top of that, it is what I refer to as eye bleach. That is to say, like, the internet sucks so much all of the time and is creating such a toxic atmosphere that sometimes it's just nice to cleanse the air. And Fat Bear Week is a great, great week for that. It's like I don't remember who it is that does it, but it's like the Alaska State Park, or it's the U.S. National Park Commission. And basically, they have all their webcams up. The bears are all getting fat before they go into their winter hibernation. And they just get video of fat bears rolling around. I think it's Alaska. And post them. And then everybody votes on who their favorite fat bear is. It's an incredible week. It's one of my favorite things. There's also a webcam that's up right now that is overlooking a river in Alaska somewhere. And you can watch the bears salmon fish. It's unbelievable. Like, you want to talk about just absolute zen. It's the best. All right, so I asked this AM, and the reason I say asked, I am doing something I am not supposed to do right now. I am, by rule of radio, not supposed to ask you your opinion. I'm supposed to give you mine and ask for your reaction to it. But I'm asking for your opinion. And the reason that I'm asking for your opinion this AM is because I'm having a hard time formulating mine right now, which I'm also not supposed to do. Even if I don't have one, I'm supposed to make one up and stand by it. That's not my style, but I'm having a real difficult time with this one. There is a debate raging around the college football internet right now. And the debate that is raging around the college football internet right now is Dabo Swinney being exposed as not a great coach? Is he being exposed by having a lack of coordinators who actually coach the football team while he recruits well, retains well, and motivates well? I don't know the answer to that, because I think you saw after the loss to Syracuse this weekend, I do think that this is emotionally troubling to Dabo Swinney. But one of the things that has always been a hallmark of Dabo Swinney has been, even when things aren't going the way that he wants them to, he has always been a guy that seems like he's able to grab a mic, give the old rah-rah, shish-boom-bah pep talk, and everybody goes, we're fine. We're fine. That's been a war cry of mine for many, many, many years. when things go bad.
Sorry, you said war cry, and I thought you wanted the Clemson war cry.
I did not. There have been many times where things have gone back-asswards in my life. And the catchphrase, there are two catchphrases that have got me through it. The first one is the one my old man used to say, which is stay focused, which is why I have it tattooed on my arm. And the other one is, it's fine. And I'm not saying it's fine like, oh, it's fine. Like, roll your eye, it's fine. I'm talking about to genuinely look at a troubling situation that you are in, recognize the spots where you can take control of it, and say, it's fine. And then make it work. That's always kind of been a Dabo Swinney thing, to look at you and go, not just is it fine, it's fine. We took an L. We're not where we wanted to be. We didn't perform the way we wanted, but it's fine. And here's how we roll on from here. And on Saturday, I did not see a guy with the mentality of it's fine. I saw a guy with the mentality of I'm not well. I'm not in a good spot right now. I got him out there. It looked like if he wasn't actually shedding them on the verge of tears during the alma mater.
See, that's the thing. I haven't really watched him during the alma mater that much. Maybe that's what he normally looks like doing it.
I don't think so.
And maybe he decided to focus into it because he looked forlorn for sure.
Well, that's a good word.
I know.
That's a good word. He did look forlorn.
It's my first time throwing that up on the air.
That's good work. That's good work. He did look forlorn. And I think that is probably the reason why this debate has started to pop up around social media. Because Saturday looked like the first time, and I know he tried to rescue a little bit when he got to the podium in the postgame press conference. I know he tried to rescue it a little bit, and I respect that. But I also think between two or three different, I'm going to use this word, I want you to know, this isn't a negative to me. I like when my coach has got a little gas on the sideline, all right? I like when my coach is willing to get up in somebody's face and get a little hype on the sideline. So the word sideline meltdown doesn't, that's not a negative by default to me. It can be, if you are melting down and not doing anything to change the circumstances, then yeah, at that point, then it's a problem. But if it's a meltdown and it is part of your coaching to make the team play better or things go your way, then I don't have an issue with it. But man, there was that roughing the passer call against Clemson. That guys, I'm sorry, it was a textbook roughing the passer. It was textbook. The guy came over the top, dropped the helmet, hit the quarterback with the crown after the ball had been released while he was already wrapped up by another player. It was a textbook roughing the passer.
And that was a textbook Clemson play.
I mean, I don't even think, like, for the intents of this purpose, I don't think we have to go down the path. I think it wasn't that it was over-aggressive, it was trying to get to and rack the quarterback, good with all that. Like, I want physicality. But it was a textbook roughing the passer. And it's not about the play, because in that moment, listen, I'll take anything at that moment where players are out there flying around the football field trying to make a bleeping play. I'll take anything at that point. But then they show the camera on the sideline. Dabo is losing his ever-loving mind about that call. And I'm like, on one hand, I get it because it's a bang-bang play, and from his vantage point, maybe it didn't look like it. But it was absolutely, and I called it real time. I'm like, oh, that's roughing the quarterback. Soon as the pop came, I'm like, that dropped the helmet. That's roughing the quarterback. And he's losing his mind.
And maybe it could be in years past they've gotten away with that, and so he cannot believe that he's not getting away with that anymore. That's just my perspective and the perspective of many others. Trust me.
It might be. The reality is, regardless of why it happened, in a moment where I need the guy on the sideline wearing the biggest headset to gather the team around him and go, hey, let's focus, let's dial in. I was getting the opposite. I was getting a meltdown at the officials about a call that you know can't be changed. Like, instead of getting up with the defense and going, here's what's next, guys, right? Like, all right, it's not us. Here's what's next. So the question going around right now, and I'll take your thoughts on it this morning, and I make it a question, not a statement, because I haven't decided where I land on it yet. Is Dabo Swinney being exposed as a guy who's not a good coach, but had great coordinators, and because you can't just recruit and retain a roster that's three deep of NFL guys, now that actually coaching is more important, Is that a problem? And the reason I ask that is because if the answer to that is yes, then the Clemson dynasty is over, at least in the way that it has been constructed the last couple of years. All right. It is 7:09 in the morning. You've got about 51 minutes until you've got to get to the office. So let us help you out, because you're going to try to kill time. You're going to try to figure out, how do I waste time until Thursday Night Football kicks off tonight? Well, the good way to do that is to spend your entire day not working, but actually talking sports. And if you've got to talk sports at work to kill some time, you got to know what's going on. And if you've got to know what's going on, you've come to the right place, because we do this. It is the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports this morning with your coworkers, your manager, your boss, your supervisor, your janitor, your IT guy, whoever it is you spend your time talking sports with. This is what you'll be talking about. Allow us to dive right in with item number one. Compiling all the baseball stories into a baseball item here on the show. The Braves lose their first game in the last 11, a 10 game. Sorry, let me say it the way Zoe said it. The Braves win. Streak is over at 10.
Again, when this show is over, you'll understand.
I'm assuming that means I left a comma in a weird place.
You'll have to wait, won't you?
No, I don't. I have the flash right here. I can go find out.
That is, again.
The Atlanta Braves win streak ends at 10 with a 4-3 loss to the Nationals yesterday. Or did you change it?
By the way, if you guys, and I wish that you would, watch the entire show on stream. When I talk about something at the end of the show, the light bulb, you will see
okay.
a physical light bulb appear above his head, and you will understand.
I look forward to it. All right, baseball stories in item number one. The Braves do lose last night. Bryce Elder had a stellar game. 5 hits, 3 runs allowed. Cade 7 through 7, but still took the L, which is pretty common this year for the Atlanta Braves. A pitcher goes out, has a gem of a game, but gets tagged with the L because he allowed 3 whole runs because the offense only got 6 hits on the night. 3 of them were dongs, including one from Greenville native Eli White, who got himself another home run last night, as did rookie Drake Baldwin, who I'm not saying is a lock for your Major League Rookie of the Year, but he should be. The Braves drop their game. They have 3 regular season games remaining. Those 3 games are tomorrow night and then Saturday and Sunday against the Pittsburgh Pirates. In other baseball news, Cal Raleigh has hit home runs number 59 and 60, and in the same game, the Seattle Mariners have clinched the AL West, became the 7th player in Major League history to hit 60 home runs in a season, a pair of solo shots in the 9-2 win over the Rockies. Raleigh said, quote, "It's crazy. 60 is, I don't know what to say. I didn't know if I was going to hit 60 in my life just tonight. What a way to do it." As the Mariners have locked in the AL West. We will get to what your playoff bracket looks like here in just a second. The Cleveland Guardians were down 15 and a half games 2 months ago in their division. Now they're in charge of their division, took over sole possession of the top spot in the division with another come-from-behind victory last night, sending the Tigers to their 8th consecutive loss. It was also the Guardians' 17th victory in 19 games, one team on a hot streak, one team on a skid, and it cost the Tigers the lead in the division, now fighting for a wild-card spot despite holding the best record in baseball for a good chunk of the season. Aaron Judge got to 50 home runs last night, tying a record as he did it for the 4th time. Judge delivered his 50th home run with a 3-run shot to right center off of Jonathan Cannon, gave the Yankees a 3-1 lead. The only major leaguers to record 4 seasons with at least 50 home runs: Aaron Judge, Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, Babe Ruth. It's a pretty good list. Stand and rise. What is it? All rise. Here comes the judge. And the Phillies.
You deserve every problem that you're having right now.
Yeah, that one was a struggle. And the Phillies last night hit 8 home runs in an 11-1 victory over the Miami Marlins. The bats come alive, and what a perfect time. Now the Philadelphia Phillies have clinched a first-round bye, so they will not play until the division round. We are going to talk about some baseball later on the show, and fingers crossed, be joined tomorrow on the broadcast by former MLB player Cody Decker to take a look and get his thoughts on the MLB playoff brackets, which will be fully and finally set on Sunday, the final day of the regular season. Let's get to item number 2. This one, a real quick one. I do think it is important because it is an absolute icon and legend of the sports world doing something special. Lionel Messi's very good at soccer. Two goals last night as Inter Miami was able to get a big win over New York FC. It is Lionel Messi's fifth time in the last nine games. Two or more goals in eight of the past 12 Inter Miami matchups. Becomes the fourth player in MLS history to record multiple goals in just eight games in a single season. One more joins an even more elite group. More importantly, this team now looks to A, secure the 2025 Supporters Shield for best regular season record, and B, Inter Miami now locked into the MLS playoffs. Let's get to item number three. We're going to keep these brief, both because we are right up against the break, A, and B, because we are going to be talking about these two stories during the course of this hour. First and foremost, a lawsuit filed by Indiana starting saver Lewis Moore has been given the thumbs up. Moore filed a lawsuit back in early August challenging the NCAA's five-year eligibility rule. He made the argument that his 3 years at Navarro Junior College in Texas should not count against his NCAA eligibility. According to a court document filed yesterday, Judge Dale Tillery ruled the NCAA's eligibility rule violated the Texas Antitrust Act. Moore leads IU with 23 tackles, two picks, and two picks returned for 41 yards. Here's the interesting thing about the story. Attended Navarro from 2019 to 22, played football there, redshirted, was injured, went to Indiana, played 2022 and 23. After his second season at IU, transferred to Ole Miss, played his third season of NCAA football last year with the Runnin' Rebels, then went back into the portal, transferred back to Indiana, filed the lawsuit, a stay was issued allowing him to play until a judge said, you can't play no more. Instead, the judge in Texas says, this violates antitrust rules. You can play one more year. This is interesting because the question is going to be, where is the line, though? If the five-year eligibility rule violates the antitrust set, then what can the NCAA do, or can guys just play college football as long as they are in college? Could we end up with 32-year-old men? Now, the answer to this, I don't think, is yes. I think down the line, probably sooner rather than later, we are going to have someone establish a line. And this is part of where I think the unionization and federal involvement comes in. We'll talk about that later. But this is a very interesting lawsuit victory. We'll talk about this one later. And this one we're talking about in the next segment, college football playoffs format not changed. The committee met yesterday for 4 hours of a regularly scheduled business session. The expectation was that there would be a long conversation about the possibility of changing the 12-team playoff, be it to 14, 16, 18, maybe 24 or 28, as the Big Ten, I do not think, did so seriously. I think it was a power play to the SEC, but suggested earlier in the year. According to Heather Dinich, the committee talked about it for 20 minutes and decided to do nothing. Now, part of the reason is they have time. They do not have to make a claim, a change, and file that change with ESPN, who owns the rights to broadcast the college football playoff, until December 1st. So they do still have all of October and all of November to make a change, to file that change with ESPN by December 1st. But yesterday, expected to have a long conversation. For some reason, they did not. I think I know what that reason is, and I'll tell you what that reason is when we come back. We got to talk some college football playoffs. We'll do that on the next set. We'll talk about that lawsuit. We got to get to some NFL. And, of course, we start breaking down this weekend's hot and spicy sports action as we roll on through a Turn to Page Thursday. The Rob Brown Show's on your radio. I'm Rob. He's Lonzo. You are an amazing person. Don't let anybody tell you different. Back after this on The Rob Brown Show and The Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
The College Football Playoff Committee met yesterday for over 4 hours in a regularly scheduled business meeting, just going over everything, making sure we're all good set up before the college football playoffs start up here. They'll be upon us before you know it. It is almost October already. It feels like week one was 2 days ago, and now we're in October. I mean, we're not in October, but we're close enough to say we're in October sarcastically. They met for over 4 hours yesterday to make sure that they're all where they need to be heading to the playoffs. One of the items that was on the agenda was a discussion about potential expansion of the college football playoff from 12 games to, or from 12 teams to, question mark, amount of teams. Could it be 14 teams? We give a couple of byes. Could it be 18 teams? We give 4 byes. Could it go to 16 teams? We have no buys. Could it go to, as the Big Ten suggested, and what I do think was a negotiation tactic a few weeks ago, go to 24 or 28 teams in the playoff. No decision was reached yesterday. Rich Clark, the executive director of the college football playoffs, said yesterday, in fact, not only did no expansion talk happen in a manner that leads him to believe that expansion is being taken as a for granted at this point, but Rich Clark said, quote, "My sense is the room is comfortable with that, that being staying at 12 teams for at least one more year. My sense is the room is comfortable with that if that's where we go, and why they're probably not too pressed with rushing to a decision. If they can find time to have a discussion and make a discussion, they want to have that opportunity." Now, this is really interesting that you would say, if they can find time to have that discussion. Rich, you just had a 4-hour meeting. And I suspect if you had a 4-hour meeting that included athletic directors and presidents and chancellors and business people from all over the country that flew to Dallas, Texas to have that meeting. Sorry, I lied. This was in Rosemont, Illinois. The wonderful vacation destination of Rosemont, Illinois.
You're dissing Rosemont. You have no idea where Rosemont is.
Yeah, neither do you.
I do. It's in Illinois.
Yeah, I got that one too. Off of the clue of context of it being called Rosemont, Illinois. So, if they came to Rosemont, Illinois for a meeting, they very clearly had time. Because otherwise they're not going to Rosemont, Illinois. Anyway, put that aside.
I think that this proves that it's not really, it's important to fans and people to talk about, oh, they're going to expand, but it doesn't appear to be important to them.
So, I think that there is a reason. Actually, I think there is a couple of reasons that, oh, it's right outside of Chicago. Never mind, they got to go have some hot dogs in Chicago. I think there are a couple of reasons that this has not expanded. I think the first one has to do with the conferences themselves. Because if expansion is going to happen, it has to obviously be approved by the conferences that are in league with the College Football Playoff Committee. Most importantly, it has to be signed off on by the Big Ten and the Southeastern Conference. As we have ended up in a world where those two conferences, by and large, get to dictate what everybody else is going to do in the landscape of college football. Now, I actually, as negative as the way that I just said that sounded, I kind of understand that, because at the end of the day, for me, I do think that is the first step to something that is going to long-term be required for this sport, which is uniformity across it. The ACC did not go to a 9-game conference slate just for inventory. They did go for inventory on television, let's be very clear. But I also think they went to a 9-game slate because they recognize even for a league that is probably in a few years going to be struggling to stay alive when Florida State, Clemson, probably Miami, probably Duke and North Carolina all leave the conference to go to one of the two bigger conferences, and those conferences become those super conferences we've talked about. Uniformity matters now so that they can try and be as close to those conferences as they can in every way, shape, and form, so that if there is a piece of artillery added to their armament later, they're not having to play from behind and go, oh, now we got to change everything now because now we've got to fight. Like, just be ready for the fight. Even if no fight shows up, you'd rather be ready for the fight than not be ready. And if you have to change your league on a dime and try to fight for survival, that's not going to work. It's also about television inventory. Anyway, I think one of the reasons, in fact, I would even go so far as to say my suspicion that the reason that this did not only not get changed yesterday, no votes, no straw poll, no nothing. Not only do I think that there is multiple reasons, I do think there is one primary reason. And I think the one primary reason here is, I think the Southeastern Conference and the Big Ten recognize that their influence over the direction that this goes, they would be giving away a bargaining chip if they were to have a format change now. And how do I know that? Why do I arrive at that conclusion? Well, the answer is because, first off, the Big Ten's already used it as a bargaining chip. Remember, the Big Ten was trying to force a number of weeks ago the Southeastern Conference, which they have acquiesced, were trying to force the Southeastern Conference to move to a 9-conference game slate. Why did the Big Ten want that to happen? Because they already did that. And the belief was, well, if we have to play 9-conference games and we have one of the baddest 2 conferences in football, then for us to be on equal footing and have the same level of challenge and degree of difficulty to get teams into the playoffs, we need you guys playing the same number of tough conference games that we have to play in the Big Ten. And when the SEC initially didn't say no, but they just didn't jump to yes, the Big Ten jumped in and said, all right, well, here's the deal. While you may be the more powerful of the 2 conferences, when we sit at that table, you and I are basically on the same footing. We have the same influence and power at that table. And we will bring to a vote 24 or 28 teams in the playoffs. Now, yes, that would probably open up room for the Big Ten to the SEC to get more teams. But more importantly than that, what that would do is provide a bargaining chip to the ACC and the Big 12, who are not going to, and I'll make this call, I hope that I'm wrong about this in the long term, but I'm going to go ahead and sneaky suspect, make a prognostication for, I don't know, the rest of my natural born life. The ACC and the Big 12 will never get as many teams into any college football playoff as the SEC and the Big Ten do. They didn't do it when they were at 4. I mean, they got as many because you could get 1 in. Sometimes those conferences got 1. But when we expanded past 4 to 12, we hit the point where the Big 12, the ACC, and of course, obviously, all the other smaller conferences would never be able to get the same number of teams in as the Big Ten and the SEC, which means they'll never make as much money as the Big Ten and the SEC. However, if they go to 24 or 28 teams in the college football playoff, something that just, once again, to be very clear, I don't think was ever a reality, that would mean the ACC, the Big 12, and the rest of the conferences would have more spots available to get more teams in and therefore make more money. Well, they would say yes to that. And if the Big Ten floats that proposal and gets consensus from every other conference at the table, they could probably strong-arm the SEC into having to go with that system. So I don't think that this is a desire from the conferences not to expand the playoffs, certainly not from the Big Ten and the SEC, because more playoff spots means more SEC and Big Ten teams in, because as we have already seen one time, Florida State University, they will bend over backwards to get the biggest television teams into the playoff bracket. This is entertainment, after all. So I think that the reason we are not expanding now is twofold. Number one, Why not jump till we have discussions? Now, they could have had more discussions than they had in 20 minutes out of 4 hours, but we'll come back to that. Number two, they don't have to make a decision now. They've got 6 more days in this month. They've got all of October. They've got all of November. If they are going to make a shift, they do not have to sign on to it until December 1st. So they got over 2 months remaining. No need to jump now. But I think the third reason it hasn't moved, and part of the reason Rich Clark may be saying nobody is necessarily jumping or jumping mad about keeping it at 12. Here's the thing. Even if we don't shift next year, it doesn't hurt the Big Ten. It doesn't hurt the SEC. They're still going to have more than everybody else. So what does that allow the Big Ten to do? They keep that bargaining chip in front of them on the table. And the SEC has a similar bargaining chip. It's a little different, but they have a similar bargaining chip. Neither of these teams, as good negotiators would, is going to give away a bargaining chip for no reason. So we'll see how this plays out. We'll talk more about this if you want to. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers, the celebrity guests? Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
I am asking you this AM for your participation in a Turn the Page Thursday. I am asking for your participation in one particular conversation, and the conversation is this. If you were given the opportunity, if you got a phone call from your athletic director this morning at either Clemson or South Carolina, whichever school you happen to be a fan of. If you received a phone call from your athletic director this AM and they said, "We've seen your work. We know who you are. You're a super fan." So we would like to give you the opportunity, unbridled and uncensored as we can get away with on the radio, to come in and to give a speech to the team this Saturday. Clemson on the bye. You will go into their locker room. You will stand in front of the team as they get prepared for practice. South Carolina, you will go into the locker room and you will give the pregame speech before the Gamecocks take the field against Kentucky. What would that sound like to you? What would you say? What is the emphasis? I've gone to a couple of different places. With Clemson, I have said the first thing I would do is not speak to the players. The first thing I do would be speak to the coaches. It would be speak to Dabo. It would be speak to Garrett Riley. It would be speak to Tom Allen. And I would have a message for each of them individually. For Garrett Riley, it would be, if you got any guts, ignore everything Dabo tells you about what to do on offense this week and run your offense. Run your offense. Run the offense you ran at TCU. Unchain this offense. Move your line around. Take advantage of the fact that Adam Randall, a guy that I was beating up on earlier in the season, is kind of turning into a dude game by game. Take advantage of the strengths. Run your offense. Ignore everything Dabo says about how to run not Garrett Riley's offense, but the Clemson offense. For Tom Allen, I would ask a question. Can you please explain to me how and why it is that you have a defense, specifically a front seven, that is loaded with guys who were expected to be NFL high round, first day, second day draft picks. And yet, two quarterbacks, largely considered mid-tier. Haynes King's a dog and Angeli is a dog. But two guys considered mid-tier quarterbacks overall were able to slice you up, man. Can you explain to me how these guys are getting time to stand in the pocket behind the offensive line of Georgia Tech and Syracuse? Now, you look and you go, wait a minute here, dude. Wait a minute here. Georgia Tech's offensive line, it's been Brent Key's focus, A, and B, Brent Key is an offensive lineman and was a good one. It makes sense their offensive line is good. I'm not disagreeing with that, but your defensive line is supposed to be better with a bunch of draft picks on it. How is Georgia Tech able to create issues for you? Syracuse doesn't have Brent Key or the offensive line roster of Georgia Tech, and yet it felt like Cade Klubnik is panicky. Garrett, you call to prevent that out of Cade Klubnik. Tom Allen, you call it to where whoever is across from you at quarterback moving forward is scared for their lives in the face of a bunch of NFL dudes. Then I would talk to the players. And the conversation with the players would effectively be, look, you're not where you wanted to be, and I get that. It's disappointing, and I'm going to keep it a buck, fellas. It is on us. And this isn't the coaching cliche of, oh, you know, we lost the game. Let's give them a bunch of credit. But, you know, we went out there and we beat ourselves today. Which is just what you say as a coach when you lose. Primarily because if you lose, the blame gets put on you as a coach. I'm saying it with every ounce of genuine that I have in my body. It's on us. It's on you. You look like, right? Let me tell you what they're saying out there in Fansville. Do you mind? Let me tell you what they're saying in Fansville. This team's got no heart. This team's got no guts. Your own fans right now. And I say this because I'm in the discussion. Clemson fans right now are saying this team's got no heart, got no guts, got no motivation. And maybe it's because you expected better and by week three, it's obvious you're not going to get there. Maybe it's because you genuinely thought that you were just going to walk onto football fields this year. Because you were the consensus ACC champ by everybody who picked one, and you were a consensus playoff pick, and maybe you just thought you were going to roll the orange helmet out there and teams were going to lay down for you. Whatever the reason is, you're doing this to yourself, and now your own fans are saying you don't have any heart. So are we going to go out there and change that narrative, or are we not? South Carolina, same conversation with the coaches. Mike Shula, in what world is Lenora Sellers a pocket passer quarterback to you? In what world is this a guy that should be taking a 3, 5, 7-step drop and standing in the pocket and climbing the pocket as if he's Drew Brees or Tom Brady? He's not. He's not. Do you remember the games last year where Lenora Sellers got onto the map? Why did he get onto the map, Mike Shula? He got onto the map because if there was anything wrong, he could take off running left, he could take off running right, and he could still drop dimes. Why aren't we doing that? On the defensive side of the football, I'm not asking you guys to go out there and pitch shutouts. I know we've had a drop in talent. I'll say it to your face. However, you know what I am upset about? Why is it that when Missouri's running back is showing you he's a tough S of a B, why are we arm tackling? Why are we lawn dart tackling where we are throwing our body into a dude with a shoulder? Why are we not wrapping up and driving to the ground? Well, but this is basic football. This is stuff that if I was coaching a middle league team and they played like you guys, I'd sit their ass. You are playing like a bunch of defenders that I would rather sit on the bench and take an L than have go out there and get stomped like you got stomped by a running back from Mizzou. What are we doing? And then to the boys, same situation. You know, one of the things I never thought I'd question was the heart of this team. That's supposed to be your thing. It's very similar. But here's the last thing, and then we got to get a phone call before we go to a break. It is very odd to me. No, it's not. It's not odd. It's just odd that it's these two teams I say this about. It is very odd to me that when I sat last night and said, all right, I better have my speeches ready to go if I'm asking for the fans to get involved with theirs. It is very odd to me that when I drew conclusions, aren't they kind of the same for both teams? Aren't they kind of the same for both teams? For both teams, it is disappointing that I never thought I'd question your heart. It is disappointing that your fans are. It is disappointing that you tackle poorly. It is disappointing that your offensive play calling is absolutely not playing to the strengths. In fact, if anything, I'd say are playing to the weaknesses of the personnel on the field. Is it just me? Or are the problems between these two disappointed schools eerily similar? All right, your AD called you this morning. You're talking to your team on Saturday. What are you saying? 844-326-3663, 844-FANFONE. Who we got, Lonzo?
We have Joey.
Joey, welcome back to the show, big fella. Good to have you.
Appreciate it, guys.
No worries.
So your take earlier, or your question earlier about helping you form an opinion about Dabo.
Yes.
I don't know why anybody's opinion changed from him. He's the same guy that was hired. He wasn't an X and O's guy back then. They never won, had a great record until Tony Elliott, Jeff Scott, and Brent Venables came around. That was the perfect mesh, the perfect situation for Clemson to explode. Those three guys are gone. And if you look at when they left, a la 2021-ish, we haven't done anything since. It's just a matter of finding the right coordinators and letting Dabo trust them like he trusted the previous three. He doesn't trust what he has, and he hasn't since they all left.
I don't think that is unfair, Joey, to the point that I've leaned on the comment from Dabo Swinney when Garrett Riley showed up a couple of years ago when he was asked, hey man, how do you feel Garrett Riley's offense fits within what Clemson has done historically? And Dabo said, and I may not have the quote perfect, but it's pretty close, Joey. He said, he's not here to run the Garrett Riley offense. He's here to run the Clemson offense. Well, and I said it then, and then it kind of went away, but I'll say it again now. Then why'd we get the guy? Why would you get a guy who's to call plays, whose offense at TCU was a lot different, less predictable, more wide open? Why would you hire that guy instead of finding an OC that knows how to play call with what you have on the football field? A, and B, you put so much tape down over the years. Don't you think at some point, Joey, everything goes stale? Everything in the world eventually goes stale. Doesn't it feel like you're kind of at that breaking point? And if the answer to that question is no, then we do have a problem with Dabo Swinney.
Oh, I 100% agree. That interview from when he hired Garrett Riley has played nonstop in my head for 4 years.
Yeah, and I understand why. Joey, I appreciate it, big fella. Good thought. Appreciate you chiming in. The reason I say I've asked this question and not formed an opinion, I do have an opinion. And the opinion is, I think Dabo Swinney is over-involved in what is happening on the football field. And if, and this is part of the reason I'm asking this question, of Clemson fans. The reason I'm asking this question is because I am intrigued by your thoughts. Is Dabo Swinney a coach who has leaned on recruiting and has leaned on retention and has leaned on being a great motivator that you don't trust as a great X's and O's guy who leaned on coordinators? Because if the answer to that is yes, then I do not see why you would go out, hire the most sought after offensive coordinator, certainly of that cycle, maybe of the last few cycles, and then put the handcuffs on him. Like, and if we know that you are a coach who has leaned on the coordinators, and again, I'm not saying that's 100% true. I'm saying everything looks like it is. If you're a dude who was carried to greatness, and I shouldn't say carried because you found these guys, you hired these guys, you put them in the office. If the team is successful because of offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators, the head coach gets credit for that. He's the guy that puts them in those offices. Finding the right personnel to work under you is part of being successful as a boss, supervisor, manager, owner, whatever. Finding the right people, putting them in the right jobs, and allowing them to do those jobs successfully is part of being a successful manager, boss, owner, whatever. So that's kind of the thought here of why would you go get a guy who doesn't run your offense And there is some thought out there that that TCU team that he took to the national championship, and obviously got hammered by Georgia, but that TCU team that he took to the national championship game, there is an argument that has been made that Garrett Riley wasn't really as responsible for that offensively as what everybody else has said he was. I don't actually agree with that. I think he is responsible for that run, specifically what that offense did to get to the national championship game. But if you're going to bring him there, and if you're going to say you're the guy for that job, and we all, at this point, I think, to some degree, know that you have leaned on your coordinator in years gone by, then why would you bring him there and handcuff him? This is what I think is problem number one for Clemson. Spartanburg Jay texts the show, said, Rob, I'm not saying Clemson has no heart, no dogs, because my football feelings are hurt. It's because Clemson has no dogs. That's from Spartanburg Jay. See, I'm not saying they have no dogs because my feelings are hurt. I'm saying they have no dogs because they got no dogs on defense, specifically. Like I said, that's kind of one of those abstract criticisms that are subjective. It's kind of hard to, from the outside looking in, go, that team's got no heart, no motivation. But I have heard it from about 1,000 different Clemson fans, and I absolutely do feel that way. Tech says Dabo's simply trying to keep what worked from 2016 to 2020 intact, so he's doing it all himself and not trusting the change that will actually be beneficial. That's kind of a popular take right now. Kind of a popular take. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, the lovely and effervescent Lulu Kesson will join the show. We'll talk to her about South Carolina, talk to her about the Kentucky game upcoming. Then we got your audio blitz, and we'll talk a whole bunch of football. But I also want to talk Ryder Cup baseball and more. Speaking of Ryder Cup baseball and more, those are all very different sports. All of them have news. News that you will find in this Sports Flash.
Also, stay tuned for the Fight Club. He won't promote it, I will. The Atlanta Braves win streak ends at 10 with a 4-3 loss to the Nationals yesterday. Atlanta had 6 hits, including home runs from Marcell Ozuna, Eli White, and Drake Baldwin, but went 0-for-11 with runners in scoring position. The Philadelphia Phillies locked up a first-round bye with an 11-1 win over the Marlins last night. The 93rd win of the season ensures the Phillies open at home in a divisional series, which starts October 4th. Drew Brees and Larry Fitzgerald highlight the NFL's Hall of Fame class of 2026 nominees. 11 other players, including Philip Rivers, Alex Smith, Greg Olson, Jason Witten, Frank Gore, and LeSean McCoy, were announced in their first year of eligibility. Nothing makes you feel more old than watching people that you saw play when they were in college and their entire NFL career be eligible for the Hall of Fame.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.